Hello, Stacy.
Hello, Chase.
Welcome to This Crazy Life.
You're laughing at me.
I'm not laughing at you.
Yeah, you are.
I'm laughing at this crazy life that we're
It is a crazy life, and you're sort of laughing because I told you what my husband and I have decided to do with our bodies after we're done with them.
That's because our guest today was telling us what his daughter is going to do.
Right.
And we'll come back to that at some point. I don't know if we should start there.
No, we shouldn't start there, but this has been a crazy life. What's going on the planet right now?
It's been a crazy last couple hours.
It has been. it has been a crazy couple hours. I mean, I don't know what to say anymore. Sometimes you just have to roll your eyes, and for me, just keep my mouth shut. That's the hardest thing for me is to keep
my mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I go out on Twitter and look at things, and like I write out these comments. And then delete.
Yeah.
They come back. I don't ever post them.
How many followers do you have on Twitter?
Oh, I don't know. I have many different accounts.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're one of those.
I do. I have one for that skier guy when I used to ski all the time.
Okay.
I would post
okay.
that people, okay. Boston fans and the Red Sox need it. So when I'm doing baseball, I pick up my old That Skier Guy account. And then like, I have Laughing Parrot, which is the one I've been on mostly now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got another one, Jaspins. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have the white knuckler, so yeah. I'm out with my RV.
I'm a white knuckler now.
Yeah, the white knuckler is because when you drive my old 78 RV,
you have
that fancy steering, you're really
rack and pinion
knuckling it to hang on for dear life.
Yeah, well, that is a bit crazy.
It is.
That is a bit crazy, but I am excited to have Patrick here today. And you've known Patrick for a long time. You guys have known each other for how long?
Yeah, well, as long as I've been married, because I met Patrick, he was running a race in La Jolla. He was a runner at the time. I don't know if he still does. We can get into that. But he was a friend of my wife's. They went to church together in high school. And he and his wife, he played piano and she sang at my wedding.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I've known Patrick for a long time.
Right. Very nice. How long have you been married now?
26 years.
26 years. Okay. That's a long marriage and a long friendship. That is so then you both ended up here. What is your story, Patrick, about how you ended up here in the Eastern Sierra?
My parents had their honeymoon up at Tamarack Lodge.
Really?
Twin Lakes, and so
that's were you at the honeymoon?
I was not.
No.
Wow.
So then they began to vacation up in Mammoth, and that's how we got to know the area and fall in love with it. And then when I was in third grade, I was living down in Inglewood, and so in third grade, we moved up here. My dad worked at Caltrans in downtown Los Angeles, got the transfer here, and then just, so third grade on.
Okay, so you're a total local.
Right, and then I graduated from high school with Jason's wife, Penny, mm-hmm. and then went to Azusa Pacific University, where I met my wife, Greta.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't one of your kids go to Azusa?
No.
Okay.
Both my kids went to Redlands.
Okay. Isn't that in the same area, though, kind of, sort of?
Azusa, Glendora, Pasadena.
Yeah.
It's close enough. It's anything east of the 101 interchange down there, I'm not really too familiar with, but I know the 10 goes through there and all that kind of stuff. Well, that is awesome. And so how did you get, Patrick, you do hospice work.
Correct.
Okay. And that is such a gracious, I don't want to say job, because it's not like a job. It's almost like a calling, you know, to do hospice work. So I would like to know, and Jason may know all this already, because you guys have known each other a long time, but I don't know that. And I don't think our viewers will know that. How did you get from 3-year-old here in Bishop, and you graduated, and you went to Azusa, and then you came back here to live, and then did you get into theology, or how did that all evolve?
Witchcraft, right?
Witchcraft.
Theology.
Witchcraft.
Well, just an interesting thing. I was talking with a friend today, and his son, who's college-aged, and you know, asking him if he had a placement test in high school, career placement, and yeah, but I don't remember what I got. And I said, well, I do. And I said, my top choice for career was a funeral director.
Yours was?
Yes.
Wow.
And I was offended by that. I was like, what? That has nothing to do with who I am or what I'm interested in. But now that I'm in the hospice, I can see, I see those different traits that were in me then as well as now that would put me in that area, funeral director.
What would be the traits?
Yeah, just the the traits of caring for people, the
compassion,
the calming, compassionate, quiet, you know, and the listening, yes, being able to do that. So I think I could see that now, but I just...
Well, funeral director, it is job security because none of us gets out of here alive.
This is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, I would imagine it's a little bit different than hospice because at a funeral director, you interact with the families after the person has passed.
Right.
And hospice, you're with the families and the patient when they've been diagnosed as, well, this is going to be towards the end.
Right, right.
So as hospice, who do you work with here in town?
So it's called Hospice of the Owens Valley.
Okay. And what is the geography? How?
Our area is from Lone Pine up to June Lake.
Okay. And where are the crux of your patients? In what areas?
Bishop and Big Pine, mm-hmm. mostly, and, you know, in the surrounding areas.
Okay.
Yeah, so Chalfont.
And so how does that work? So is your services coordinated? Does the family call you? Does the doctor or hospital call you? How does the whole thing become to where you're actually 100% on hospice care with this patient?
What is needed is that that if your doctor has to say, has to write off saying, yes, this person is terminally ill. Mm-hmm. And then we take that it's presented to hospice, our administrator, Ruby Allen, that she has to agree with that. And of course, we have Dr. Leja on our board, who is our doctor that we refer to when we have our meetings as well. So there has to be that agreement. But it has to be where your doctor estimates that you have 6 months to live or less.
Wow.
I just had this conversation within the last 5 years, California became a compassionate care state with the Compassionate Care Act. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
right to die.
Yeah, the right to die. And I asked them, I said, you know, I'm curious about if somebody is diagnosed with Alzheimer's, they can live for 10 years with Alzheimer's. So how does the Compassionate Care Act work with that? And she said the exact same thing is you have to be diagnosed with a terminal illness and have at least 6 months, no more than 6 months to live before they will initiate that.
So you can live for 10 years with Alzheimer's before a terminal illness.
Yes.
Determinate.
Yes.
But you would never have your mind anymore to make that decision.
Body functions or anything. Wow. And it's, I think it's really a crush on the families, finances, and just the medical community.
So the California Compassionate Act, have you guys experienced any of that here locally? People wanting the right to die?
Yes. Yes, so it's not my real expertise. My administrator,
but no, yeah,
and, you know, so we do have requests, and so I'm glad you bring that up because I'm finding that many people think that hospice is about ending life, and I have to say no. We're about living as best as we can till the end.
Right.
We are comfort care, mm-hmm. Palliative care. As opposed to, we're not trying to cure you, and that's for the hospital. But once you realize and the patient says, you know what, the science can't do anything more for me, so I'm just going to have palliative care. I'm going to go home. I don't want to sit at the hospital all the time. I'm going home. I'm going to be comfortable there. I'm going to die there with my family, friends around me. And when medication is needed for pain, and then that's what I'm going to take.
Mm.
And so we're about... What is the phrase? Our motto is giving life to days when days cannot be added to life.
Oh, I love that. Giving life to days when days cannot be added to life.
Yes.
It's kind of like the Serenity Prayer, but in a different way.
Something like that. So we're trying to make your life as full as possible to the end. Like we can't help you and make your days any longer, but the days we have, we're going to help you be as comfortable as possible.
I want you to share the story that you told me. The guy wasn't an atheist or whatever, but you talked to him and he said in the story, my beliefs aren't your beliefs.
Correct. Yeah.
Did you tell that story?
Sure. So I...
Because that explains what you do.
Sure. I am a hospice chaplain, And then I also do bereavement and grief work. But as a hospice chaplain, and very quickly, yes, I have a Bible degree in religion, but I studied, my focus was on missiology, so different cultures. And so I really think that helps bring, and knowing the different religions and different belief systems. So that helps me approach not from a singular angle, but understanding many angles. Right. So as a chaplain or spiritual advisor, so I go in, and as the story is, yes, one of my patients, I said, so tell me, what do you believe? What do you believe? Where do you think you'll go when you die? What's your religious belief? What's your background, your faith background? Well, I don't think I believe what you believe. I said, well, it's not about what I believe. I'm here to help you process what you believe. Oh, well, in that case, and then he was able to share with me. So I've had people who believe in reincarnation, people who you might think of Native American traditional ideas there, Catholic, Protestant, atheist, you know, and had an atheist who said, well, so you're a chaplain, I'm an atheist, so do you want to hear why I believe in atheism? Absolutely. So I met with him, and he tell me what he believed, and that was important to him to process his beliefs, you know. And then if he says, well, what do you believe? Well, then I can share, you know, but it's not my place to push my beliefs on anyone.
I love that.
It's for me, and as we talked, Stacey, on the phone, yes, it is so important to listen. And a lot of people say, well, Patrick, what do you say to people? And I said, I mostly listen. And when the time is right, I say something encouraging. Mm-hmm. But I do a lot of listening.
Hmm.
And tell me about the families. It must be, I mean, there's grief. I mean, grief is a huge part of the hospice, you know, the hospice care. And so how do you help people who are still alive, but are in the process of passing on with their grief, and then also with the grief of the families who are watching their loved one dwindle away, so to speak?
So my job as a chaplain, including the other roles at hospice, whether it's the nurse or medical social worker, our primary care is for the patient, but we're also there for the families, the caregivers. And it's not necessarily a family member, you know, so whoever is the caregiver, and that's our focus. And we try to talk with them as well, listen to them and encourage them, help them through the process. And here's what you can expect. They're going to slow down. They're going to sleep more. They're going to eat less, and then they're going to drink less, and then to nothing, you know. In the end, they're not going to talk anymore. May be in a deep sleep, whatever it is. And here's the medications we can give to comfort them, calm them, help with pain. So you just help them along with the process. And when this happens, we're not going to call 911. Remember, they have chosen to be on hospice, so they're planning on dying and exiting peacefully.
Right.
And so when the time comes and it ends, and you take the time you want with your loved one when they die, and you can call, you know, the mortuary when you're ready. You know, and so if you want us to be there to help comfort you, then, you know, let us know. It's things like that. And you're there for them. And then I'm there afterwards. Some people want that care. Some people want to be able to talk and share and cry and say how they're feeling. And other people, I'm good, you know, and sometimes they are good in that they have a good network of family or friends or church community or whatever it is. For a year after the passing of our patients, so I can help them if they wish, you know, with grief support. But then I also do a grief group for the community throughout the year. And this year I'll be doing four times this year, and I believe it's this January. I think it's on a Thursday,
21st or something.
26th or 27th, whatever that Thursday is of that week. I'll be starting at, I think it's 5:30. We meet out at the Jill Kinmont Booth School. They're really gracious out there to let us use the George Lozito Conference Center.
Is it hard for people to talk about their loved ones? I mean, there's probably, I would imagine, a lot of crying that goes on. during these grief groups, especially when somebody has just lost, you know, somebody recently. So what do you say to a family member in these grief groups when they've just lost somebody?
It's a big question there. Well, one of the first things that I will tell the group or tell anyone is, hold on, here we're going for a ride here, and it is a roller coaster with your feelings and emotions. Your thoughts will go all over the place, and people will still be surprised. It's a year later, I'm still grieving. Yes. Is that strange? No. Well, I put my husband's socks on, you know, is that weird, Patrick? No, it's not weird. You're just trying to be close to them. And so what I try to encourage people is everybody is different. Everybody deals with grief differently. And you deal with grief differently from person to person, depending on your relationship, how you knew them, the whole situation. There's so many different facets to how grief works. And so I just encourage people, don't even judge yourself or allow other people to judge you. You're going to grieve. It's a process that you go through. It's not I did the 8-week course, and hopefully you should.
I'm cured.
Yes, you're cured. It's something that you take with you through your life.
Exactly.
But this helps you to grow in a healthy way. I'm sure you can wash it down with alcohol, but I highly discourage that because you're not actually dealing with your grief.
No, you're drowning them.
Yeah,
exactly. Have you found, and I've heard this, that the second year after the passing of a loved one is even harder than the first year?
Usually not, but often with, I think what I would see is with spouses, and that it's harder. And I talked to somebody fairly recently, and I said, do you think it's because you've been in a fog this last year and now we're on the second year and you've kind of come out of the fog and reality has hit you? Yes, she said.
I don't think I'd want to go on. I would consider that a terminal illness and would want California compassion.
You sound like my husband.
My wife's my best friend. We like to spend all of our time together, and that's one of the things, I hate to be selfish, but I hope I go first.
I do get that a lot. Many people will tell me, especially spouses, will say, it's not that I want to kill myself. I just don't want to be alive anymore.
Right.
Is that weird, Patrick? Not at all. No, that's how you feel. And I encourage people in our grief groups to be honest.
Yeah, be as transparent.
As transparent.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Winnie the Pooh said.
Yes, great scholar.
Said, and I wrote this in my wedding vows to actually my husband. It said, if you live to be 100, I want to live to be 100 minus one day so I never have to live without you.
I remember that.
Yeah. You do? That's.
Yeah. Once you said that, I remember that.
Yeah.
I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
On
so
the
I have that lake. Have that on our wall, in our wall, because it is difficult to think about the person that you, who is your best friend and who, you know, who you've done all these things with to not be there. You know, to not be there anymore. And my husband jokingly said, you know, I hope we both go together.
Notebook.
So I said.
Remember Notebook?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So I said, so I'm not driving with you anywhere then. I said, if you want us, that, you know, and I said, I'm taking separate planes because if I don't know, you know, we can't control what is going to happen. And it is going to be what it is going to be. But it's, but to have hospice there is such a comfort. And I don't remember growing up, I don't remember there being hospice care in the 70s and 80s. There probably was, but it wasn't part of.
Right.
Aware of it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it.
And
well, I didn't lose a family member until, I lost my grandfather in 87, just 2 weeks after my older son was born. And that was pretty traumatic. And then my dad in 93. But that was a whole different thing. My grandfather just dropped from a heart attack taking the trash out. It was 84. My father died from prostate cancer because he refused to take care of it the normal way. He thought he could cure it homeopathically.
Mm-hmm.
He was a pharmacist in Beverly.
A lot of that going on.
Yeah, he was a pharmacist and he should have known that he should have taken a different route. And this is a whole different conversation, but I have had a conversation with him since then. And he did say that he told me, you know, because I was a pharmacist and I saw what my male patients went through with prostate cancer and the medications they were on and everything and how horrible it was. He said, when I found out I had it, I was just not going to take care of it and not live that way.
Mm.
So yeah, that was,
wow.
Yeah.
So circling back to the very beginning.
Yep.
When I was laughing, let's start with you. How does your daughter want to be disposed of?
Yeah.
I don't know quite how the process works with mushrooms.
Yeah.
She
wants to grow into mushrooms.
Yes. And then she's talking about the tree.
So she wants to be a fungus.
Fungus, correct.
Well, that way when she dies, she'll be a fungi. So then you said.
And then I said about my choice. About wanting to
you're going
to
be donated.
I'm going to be donated.
And then
we are going to, we call science care.
Right.
And there's a number. All our kids have the number. They don't want to hear about it, right? But I said, I'm emailing you the number. Put it in a folder that says death or something. And then if we die together, which my husband wants, I said, but then what you're going to do is you're going to call them and they'll come get our bodies. And they'll take them to whatever university. If we die here, probably UNR, because they have a doctor and, you know, is it not entomology? What is it? When they open the bodies, the first class, when the bodies, what's that class?
I don't remember. But
not entomology.
Forensics?
No, it's not forensics.
Anatomy?
Thank you very much. I said my menopause brain. Anatomy.
Okay.
So they do whatever they do, and they're going to look inside me and go, wow, she's run out of organs. No wonder she's not here. And then, then they cremate you a month later, and then they take the ashes and give them to the kids, and it's free.
Yes. So you were saying you're frugal even in death.
We are frugal even in death because it is free.
Because my life.
So because we looked into how much cremation is between $4,000 and $5,000.
Holy smokes!
It's gone
backyard.
It's gone up, and that's expensive. So we thought, well, okay, this will work for us, and so we're going to do that. So
play Come On Baby Light My Fire.
No, I'm going to play. I've got.
I'm sorry, you have music plan.
I totally have music plan. It's going to be cry music in the beginning, and then I think I have Walking on Sunshine. That song, Walking on Sunshine.
Yeah.
That song, and then I'm going to have a Carole King song, Way Over Yonder, and then Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven. So we'll do the cry stuff, and then some happy fun stuff.
Good.
But you know what? I could die in it and nobody else will be around, or somebody will all of a sudden, my whole world of friends can all of a sudden not like me and nobody will show up at the memorial. So
Jimmy, our director, is going to go out with On the Highway to Hell.
Oh, you know what? That's a good
I'm going
one.
A Stairway to Heaven.
That's it. You can play
it. Or you're going out.
That's a good one.
That too. But it is a good point. I wanted to say with Stacey is, so many people wait to the very end to make a decision, and so many people don't make any decisions, and so their parents die, for example.
And there's no living trust. There's no will. There's nothing.
Well, they don't know what's going on. I didn't know. Did my mom want a funeral? Did she want a cremation? Did she want burial?
Yeah.
What? Oh my goodness, I don't know. And here they are grieving, and then all these things.
And then all the siblings at that point can't settle. The bickering begins. The division story.
Well, it's the business. Death is a business.
Yes. You're absolutely right. Now let's turn to some fun stuff. We've got like 3 minutes left.
Okay. You want to ask some of these? Well I asked the last one.
Start first.
Okay. Fun questions, so we get to know a little bit more. Which superpower would you like to have, and why?
Oh, don't answer.
Why not?
I think it would be amazing to fly.
Okay.
Yeah, even though I'm afraid of heights, with the superpower would take the height fear away.
Right, because you're a superpower and you're not afraid of anything.
Correct,
okay.
Yes.
All right, if you could be any animal, what would you be and why? Animal.
Right. Well, when I was a child, the cheetah was always my favorite because I used to run, and the cheetah is the fastest land animal, and I love cheetahs, and I think they're beautiful creatures.
What about you? What animal would you like to be? Because I know what I'd want to be. What do you want to be?
Well, can I be an insect?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be a dragonfly.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. I'm going to be a humpback whale because I spend my winters in Maui, I spend my summers in Alaska, and I can have as much fat as I want and nobody cares. The more blubber, the better.
That's nice.
I've got that down.
All right, let's see here. What was the last book you read?
Well, I'm currently...
Bible doesn't count.
The Bible doesn't count. I'm currently reading A Pilgrim's Progress. Okay. And I've read this before, and I just love this, you know, during the Puritan period in England.
Okay.
Okay. And if you had a chance to sit next to God and ask God one question, what would it be?
Why, God, why?
That's your question. I want Patrick's question.
I don't have an answer. I don't know what to say. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. All right. How would you sell me eggnog in the summer?
Well,
come on. I got money in my pocket.
Eggnog goes with whether you drink tea or coffee or hot chocolate. Wow. It is perfect with all those drinks. It's so good. And it's good for you.
I gave up eggnog when I gave up brandy, so.
I didn't say it was alcoholic.
So. I'm telling you, the only way I liked eggnog was with brandy.
And we
happy to sell me eggnog.
There was an eggnog shortage this winter.
There was an egg. Oh, because of the egg problem.
I don't know why, but there
it is the egg issue.
There's always something.
Toilet
paper,
chickens,
eggs, you know, whatever. Do we have enough for one more question?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. If you could speak to one type of animal, what kind of animal would it be?
Oh, that's a good one.
Feline.
Feline.
Yeah.
Are you a Leo?
I have three cats.
Oh, okay.
I'm curious. What would you ask the cat?
We just communicate. We'd have conversation. I don't know, but sometimes the cat just yells
catnip.
At me, and I don't know what they want. I'm like, catnip. Do you want to be held? Your catnip? What is your litter box not clean? What do you want?
Interesting.
It's kind of trying to figure out what newborns want. You know,
yeah.
It's because they are different cries. Yeah,
yeah.
You have. Several times.
Yeah.
But you've done it more than I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't go there. Well, we are out of time.
Well, it's crazy how fast this time goes here.
It does.
Thank you, Patrick, for being on This Crazy Life. And I really appreciate, and I know Jason does, and all our viewers and listeners out there, what you do for the community here, because hospice is a really important part of life.
We're going to have Patrick back to talk about his acting.
Oh, acting.
What he does in the community. There is so much. We've just, the tip of the iceberg.
We just scraped it tonight.
Patrick.
Okay.
So thanks, Patrick, for coming
Thank you, Patrick.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Stacey Powles. And this is
This Crazy Life.
Yes, what he said.